I typically like to look at 3 to 5 times free cash flow, depending on the business, depending on how much, how scarce their business is, how good of customers they have. Mm-hmm. Do they have contracts? Is it predictable revenue? We know very well if it's $400,000 in revenue, what's that worth to us?
If you know revenue in our industry, I can tell you within 2% what it makes, what it's going to sell for, what it's worth.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today, we're continuing on with part two of a conversation that we had with Tony and Lars about acquisitions, and we're really going to dive into the topic of how to evaluate your business. How much is your business worth? How much should I be paying for a business that I would be acquiring? A couple of rules to consider when we talk about that. So, grab a pen, grab a piece of paper, get ready to dive into some tactical information on business acquisitions on this episode of the Coffee Break Podcast.
We got so much to say, we got a podcast to make, we're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
What are some baseline ways that you can look at valuing a business? And even for, more so if I'm a current business owner that is saying, hey, I'm interested in selling.
What's it worth?
What's it worth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know we had a debate in the car ride home yesterday on what's it worth. And this has been a popular conversation over the last few years for sure. And, you know, after what we've gone through the last couple of years, there's a lot of people looking for an exit. And that's where valuation comes into play. Now, I know if we were talking about what we'd learned in school, you know, they use free cash flow, discounted cash flow methods, all of that stuff. And that, I mean, that'll get you an A on a finance exam. but reality is that really isn't overly practical. It's good because it gives, and what that is, I mean, you can just Google it and look up discounted cash flow and they can, it'll show you what it is. But it's, you know, the more practical and more common, I guess, certainly in my area is asset sales.
Yes.
So maybe I'll throw this to you. How do you start with an asset sale? How do you do it?
So to me, I look at free cash flow. I look at what is it worth? What do I feel it's worth in the open market? But also what do I feel it's worth to us? Mm-hmm. And I think one thing I've learned from you that's really valuable is a lot can depend on terms and financing. And basically you want to be making 20 to 30% over whatever you're paying the bank to make it worth your risk. So really it's not just the purchase price. It's how are you financing it and what does that look like? And I think that was a really valuable piece of advice that it's not just, you know, you're not just paying somebody 50 grand or 200 grand or 300 grand. How long are you paying it to them for? What sort of, you know, discount are they giving you on an interest rate? Mm-hmm. I typically like to look at a very basic piece is just 3 to 5 times free cash flow, depending on the business, depending on how much, how scarce their business is, how good of customers they have. Mm-hmm. Do they have contracts? Is it predictable revenue? Also, what can we do with the business? So we know very well if it's $400,000 in revenue, what's that worth to us? Mm-hmm. Typically pay, again, 3 to 5 times whatever it's worth to us.
And when you say 3 to 5 times cash flow, are you including all assets in there?
Yeah.
Like, so that's...
Unless there's anything major like a real estate, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that generally will account for anything, any inventory, vans, assets, that kind of thing. So a company in our industry that does $500,000 a year, you know, is going to make $50,000 to $70,000 times 3 or 5. It's
probably worth 150 to 200 grand.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's, you know, one of my favorite sayings is you can pick the price if you want to sell your business, mm-hmm. whatever you want. If I can pick the timeline,
sure.
You know, you think your business is worth $2 million. Perfect. How does $1 a day for the next million days sound?
Sure.
Right. So I go about things similar to Tony.
Except better, obviously.
Except better, yeah. The first thing I look at and first thing I'd tell anyone is, you know, your business is worth what somebody will pay for it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what it says on paper.
Sure.
Well, I bought it for $100,000. Okay.
Yeah.
And what can you sell it for? Because it's only worth what somebody will pay for it. Mm-hmm. That's first and foremost. Then I again, the five-ish times I've done this, it's pretty structured. I just, you know, lay it out because if you read any negotiation books, Never Split the Difference was one of my favorites there. You know, it's we're taking your side of it, my side of it, put it in the middle, and how do we solve that problem, right? Sure. So I just lay it out that say, okay, here are the assets. Okay, cash, you probably just keep your cash. Mm-hmm. Accounts receivables is something we've done in the past. You know, it's going to cost me money to collect it on your behalf. Okay, so I usually, I don't know, discount it 20%.
Sure.
So something like that. Your next line is inventory. Okay, if you're in our industry, your inventory is, I don't know, it can be a wide variety, and lots of people don't even know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, you know, you can kind of sure. estimate where it's going to be. I take that inventory and I use a multiplier and say, okay, realistically, 70% of it, 80% of it is probably usable, mm-hmm. and there's a whole bunch of Frankenstein junk in sure. the corner that's actually going to cost me money to throw out.
Yep,
that is all gold. But, yeah.
And the question is how easy is it to know what they have? Do they know? Is there a record?
Sure.
Is it worth counting even?
So that gives you your discount methodology.
Yeah.
There's no listing of inventory at all. I see that there is a warehouse full of stuff.
Yes.
So now it's going to require 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours of time to actually go through and figure out what there's.
And that is an investment that the seller mm-hmm. should be making.
Yep.
Yeah, right. Go. My first question is, you want me to buy it? Okay. What are you selling?
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, well, I don't know, I said, okay, I'll give you a buck for it. Well, that's too low. Yeah. So what are you selling?
Yeah.
Right. So I go through inventory, then I go through equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our world, that's, you know, key machines that can be 10 grand each, that kind of thing. All right. List those off. Okay. They're used, a couple years old. When it comes down to it, it doesn't really matter that much. If it's $1,000 or it's $1,500, doesn't make a big difference,
mm-hmm.
right? Over the lifetime of a business, it just doesn't. So I go through equipment and then I look at major, like automotive. It's really the main thing in our industry. So I put all those assets together and say, okay, that's roughly what it's worth,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you'll get the reaction of, yeah, that sounds about right, or, oh, that's way lower than mm-hmm. I thought. Usually the latter. But that's where I then take that and say, okay, let's say it's, I don't know, 100 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got 100 grand worth of assets discounted, so that's what it's worth. You know, I look at that, I plug it into a spreadsheet mm-hmm. and see if the bank lends me money, how much does that 100 grand cost? The bank's going to lend it to you over 4 or 5 years in my world. Okay, that's going to cost me, $3,000 a month. Okay, well, I can afford to pay $3,000 a month for 5 years. $3,000, I want to make 30% of my money. That says, okay, I can afford to pay about this much for it.
Yeah.
Right. And if they want more than that, well, we extend the terms. We look over 9 years. You can do a vendor carry. Okay, I'll give you $50,000 today mm-hmm. and then $50,000 in a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all kinds of things like that. The last thing I wanted to mention was right now, because our generation, we're used to 1%, 2% interest rates,
mm-hmm.
right? Right now, if I'm a seller, I'm worried because interest rates are going up means money is more expensive for mm-hmm. us to get mm-hmm. to acquire, which just means we can pay less for the business. So as interest rates are going up, the value of your business is going down.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing important to ask the seller is, are you willing to finance any of it? All three of our acquisitions, we've had different forms of seller financing, but that's typically what we found is sellers are willing to finance at least some part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, they may not need or want their cash right away. And that's a very, you know, useful tool to use to help you with the acquisition.
So I want to underline a couple of things because there's a lot of information that was just tossed around. So I'm a business owner and I'm looking, hey, I think I'm ready to sell. Want to look at this. The things I need to start being prepared for are I need to actively have a clean list of inventory,
mm-hmm.
Itemized equipment that I've got included in this,
mm-hmm.
and also a clean set of books.
What are you selling?
Yeah.
Right? It has to be clear. What are you selling?
I think we've all been in conversations before with people about trying to sell their business, and they have a feeling, an emotional attachment to the business that they've built for a long period of time. And some of the things that I've heard repeatedly with different people that are interested in selling is, I have a dedicated, loyal customer base. This is a lot of potential here. There's a lot of potential to grow. My customers have been with me for a long time. Well, I've got a lot of stuff. I've got a lot of good equipment. But they don't actually or they'll also say, well, it's hard to look at my books and see what we do as an organization. And all those are kind of signs that their business is probably not as structured as well as they think that it is. And so they're estimating the value at a higher rate. Mm-hmm. So from a seller's perspective, if you want to make your business more valuable, get your books clean, clear, and consistent. Have that itemized list of inventory and equipment that you're going to sell. Mm-hmm. And also, the customer list is somewhat helpful, but it's not always the determining factor, right? And that's what I think in most conversations that I've been involved with, that is the leader. When a seller comes in, here's my customer.
I got a bunch of big customers.
Don't worry about the other stuff over here, but just check on my customers.
Yeah. That is very common. What you value that as is, is an opinion. Everyone has an opinion on that for sure.
It's definitely worth getting professional opinions in some way, shape, or form. You can go to your bank or you can go to your accountant. Go to two or four different places and most people will at least give you an idea of here's what it's worth.
Yep.
Because I've noticed a lot of times owners, well, like you said, they're going to overvalue it.
Yep.
So maybe this is a bit selfish as a buyer, but I want the owner to have some sort of an idea on what they're expected, because the true value is most likely far less than what they think.
Well, and to add on that, I think is very structured. You can take your business to somewhere and get it assessed and evaluated as an independent third party situation. Mm-hmm. And what they're going to ask for, and this is the thing that I want to make sure that you're clear on, is they're going to ask for financials.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to talk about the list of customers that you have and the potential that's in the business. They're going to look at the financials. And if your financials are not favorable from a profitable standpoint, the business is going to not be as valuable. And they're also – most good evaluation companies are going to do that in three different ways and give you an average.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times the numbers that you guys were talking about earlier, it's an easier look at a multiplier. And most every time that you look in evaluation, it's going to come down to that kind of factor. So you can start navigating that from that
perspective. Well, and the more ambiguous that information is, the lower the multiplier is going to be because you're not as confident in, is it true? Is it going to continue down that same path?
Yeah.
That made me think of a couple things. One with a customer list. A great customer list. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I don't need to know the customer's names, mm-hmm. but give me your 10 biggest customers.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Customer 1 through 10. Mm-hmm. This is what their sales were in 2022, 2021, 2020, and show me that this is a consistent customer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some of them are going to be, well, this is a new one we just took on. And that's fine. You can forecast what you think they're going to do. And then that's a $100,000 customer. Okay. We know we make about 70% on that. Okay. So that's what that customer is worth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It kind of gives you an idea. And because again, what we're trying to get to as buyer and seller is that we're on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is a $70,000 customer. So if I had to pay for this customer, I'd value it this way, borrow this much money. Okay. So I need to make 30%, 20%, whatever that number is. And then say, okay, that's what that customer is actually worth. And what the three of us know is, certainly in our industry, and I know this will be the same for most industries, is our businesses are in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. They're different sizes. They're different. Well, you're good at some things.
Well, thank you.
We're good at most things. But similar businesses are almost identical.
Yeah.
Right. When we look financially, all the metrics, all the math, it's all very similar. Mm-hmm. So like Tony said, you have a company, if you know revenue, in our industry, I can tell you within 2% what it makes, what it's going to sell for, what it's worth. Because it's just not rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
At LockDock Security, We believe your camera system should provide more than just surveillance. Being able to see exactly what's going on at your place of business from your phone or computer is fantastic. But what if there were more analytics, giving you the ability to improve your business operations? Track how many people visited your location, stopped by your display, and even how often they passed by your store. Be alerted if someone was loitering, vandalizing your business, or even dumping trash. It's time for you to take advantage of this technology. Contact us today for more information about our cloud-based camera systems. LockDock Security, helping you protect your people and property.
So I think we've kind of covered that. If I'm a buyer, what I'm going to be looking for. If I'm a seller, what I'm going to be looking for. And then kind of that third piece is I'm a customer. And all of this talk about mergers and acquisitions and all stuff, kind of, what does that mean for me? Am I going to have a different pricing model? Do I have a different contact? Obviously, I have a different person handling the billing. What does all that look like from just a process standpoint? Am I still going to get the same service? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse? And those are some of the questions I think will start to come up from a customer standpoint. What have you experienced on that side?
So one thing that we found very valuable is the former owner basically endorsing the buying company. Ideally, you know, a phone call, a personal email, talking to them. We've had owners that give people a heads up, made sure that they were very adamant about, you know, I've sold to Assured Security or I've sold to Bloomington Lock and Safe. Mm-hmm. They do a really good job. I'm going to stay on and help them and basically make sure that they tell that story, because hearing it from, you know, if they're used to working with Chad, hearing it from Chad is going to resonate a lot more than me calling them and saying, hey, we just bought so-and-so and we're going to be your new security provider. They're going to be like, who are you?
Right.
So I think having the former owner endorse you is a really big, important thing. Because usually, depends on the owner. But, you know, going back to that customer list, I think that is valuable because of that reason to get to know that customer list. Because, like I said, if they really like Chad, and that's the only reason they're using LockDock is because of Chad, and now Chad's not going to be there, then that value is dipping fast.
Yeah, and I would say also from the buyer's standpoint of things, if you're already prepared when you go into those meetings with this is what we believe this acquisition is going to mean to you as a customer. Mm-hmm. This is the value that we believe we can bring. This is kind of how some of our processes work that may be beneficial to you, and be ready to offer that on day one at that first meeting instead of chasing your tail on it is, I think, a very valuable lesson that we learned through some of those getting prepared, being ready, and saying, hey, this is what we can bring to the table, and this is why we think this is going to be good for you as a customer.
Yeah, there's always going to be change in an acquisition whenever for the customer, and making sure that you spend that value to what are they going to get out of it? Mm-hmm. What's the benefit to them? Because there should be something.
Well, I think, too, like you have something either on your website or even just a single sheet document that says, hey, here's new mailing address, here's new phone number, here's this or that, the other, any of that pertinent information that would be relevant to transfer that information, because that's one major hassle that I think even you alluded to earlier about the direct deposits, something that you don't really think of. Mm. Well, now you've got all these established customers that are used to dealing with this one contact, and you've got to get all that vendor information updated. What's the easiest way that you can help them go down that path?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that transition period is very challenging. You know, one thing I'd add to what Tony said is I actually write in the agreements that the narrative of that transition is handled by us, because I want to control the narrative to customers. I've had owners, I want to email my customers and tell them. And I appreciate that, but I want to have some say and influence on what's being said and when it's being said. And again, that, you know, you'll have a pretty good idea of when you see the top 10 customers, if the top 10 customers are 80% of the revenue, right? Those are the 10 customers that we want to focus on. And that's when, you know, in-person works really well. You set up a meeting and have that sit-down conversation. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are the things that are going to be different. You know, generally speaking, after an acquisition, the customer is in a better position than they were before, certainly in our industry.
Sure.
Because, I can't speak to the big multinationals, but generally speaking, the people that are doing acquisitions right now are more business oriented and focusing on the kind of new age business, you know, implementing new technology, things to make life more convenient, which seems to be just the trend that things are going right now. So, you know, customers, because it's new, it's different, seems risky. But it's just that communicating with them and laying out expectations that are clear. This is how things go. I hate to say it. In our industry, you know, there is some loyalty to the provider. But the vast majority that I've experienced is we walk in and say, oh, you know, Charlie's actually sold the business and he's moving to us. And their reaction is, oh, good for him.
Yeah.
You know, oh, good. He's retiring. Good for him. And, oh, and you're Lars? Okay. What's your phone number? Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's about the extent of it.
Yeah. Well, from a customer standpoint as well, especially when you have a business that has an owner that is, you, as we talked about earlier, getting to a certain age of life that they're starting to slow down, the customers are actually quite attuned to the fact of, hey, Charlie is 69 or 70 years old, and what are we going to do whenever he decides to retire? Because he has been our service provider for 25 years.
How does this impact me?
How does this impact me?
And you basically come in there and say, it's not going to. In fact, it's going to make life better.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Right. That part is easy. All right, so we covered if I'm a buyer, if I'm a seller, and if I'm a customer. I think a lot of great valuable advice across the board that people can be mindful of and aware of in the possible acquisition mode. So I appreciate you guys' input and feedback. Any final closing thoughts before we get out of here?
The one thing that I think you said that I would add or reiterate is the plan. I know you've mentioned that you created a plan. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's the steps. That's not something we've done in the past and something I think that would have been really valuable to do. So I think that's probably my main takeaway of this conversation is have a plan, know what you're going to do, make sure it's organized, and
you know, I got two pieces of advice. One will be a little controversial, maybe. The first is either side of the business, immediately engage in your accountant, your professionals. Accountants will make sure everything is clean and clear. You know, the main goal of any buy and sell arrangement is the buyer wants to take the least amount of money out of their pocket and the seller wants to get the most in their pocket. And then there is tax implications, which is the third party that takes a good chunk of that. So the goal should be to give them the least and have us the most involved. So having an accountant in it right from the beginning is hugely important because they have your best interest. And you just be clear on what where you want to go, whether it's an asset sale or a share purchase. There's different tax implications. And you can just Google the difference between an asset purchase and share purchase. So that's number one. Number two, and this is what will be a little controversial, and I'll preface this by saying my father is a lawyer. Okay. I don't engage lawyers until near the end because I have found in the past that lawyers are more focused on mitigating risk and making sure it's almost like the negotiation, the fight is what the focus is rather than
they're going to look at worst case scenario
rather than getting the deal done. So because I've had it where we had a deal done, signed on both sides, and then the lawyer was like, well we got, and it almost killed the deal. And you know, you have an agreement, this is where we want to get to, now we just have the lawyers at the end say, did we miss anything? But getting them involved too early, I have experienced that the conversation now becomes the fight and the two lawyers disagreeing about things that are immaterial to us.
Fight back against the spread of germs with specialty designed door hardware. From arm hooks and crash bars to wave to open, At Lock Dock Security, we have the right fit for any situation. Arm hooks can be retrofitted to doors with existing pull handles. Adding crash bars can reduce even more touch points while retaining ease of exit. And for those looking to remove touch points altogether, we offer Wave 2 Open solutions enabling you to command the door from afar. Reduce touch points and live healthier with Lock Dock Security.
After you've done at least one and you've got a hold of a good lawyer, then you can ultimately be prepared when you walk in the next time. So you know all the things that you need to be asking, all the questions you need to be prepared for, all of the documents, all of the information to speed that up. Because, yeah, I think especially if our first one took tremendously way too long because it was just that long drag. But now that process has been made aware, now you can kind of track through that at a faster pace. Yeah. And
you go to the accountant, you can figure out a valuation, you negotiate it with the other party, figure out what you want to pay, figure out what they're going to accept. That's when we now can talk to a lawyer and make sure we're not missing anything.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think that's actually really good advice. I was going to say one more thing. As you were talking, you mentioned never split the difference. And I think that one of the big takeaways from that book is always seek a win-win, right? You're looking to sell your business. I'm looking to buy your business. Let's find a way that this works for both of us. It doesn't need to be hostile. It doesn't need to be, you know, most of the time in our negotiations with people, it's very easy to work it out directly with the owner. Where it gets messy is when the lawyers get involved. So work with the owner, work with the seller, and seek a win-win scenario.
And that just prompted me to think of one more thing. And again, might not be popular advice, but this is just my opinion. On the buy side, assuming you're financing it, $10,000 amortized over a period of 5 years is what you generally will get from a bank. Over 5 years per month, $10,000 is a difference of $20 a month, right? To the buyer, it really doesn't make a difference. So if you get yourself in a situation where, you know, they want to sell it for $100,000 and I want to buy it for $90,000, that extra $10,000 is 10%, but it's really not a big difference looked at from a cash flow per month. Whereas on the seller side, it's $10,000, right? So it means something to the seller, but not as much to the buyer. So on the buy side, I'm always a little more flexible. Where again, okay, you want a little bit more, I just need a little more term, right? And it's something that don't let a deal go sour because of a silly little, 10 grand, depending on the size of it, it might be 100 grand.
Sure,
yeah. It might be a million, it doesn't matter. But it gets in the way a lot in the early stages.
Yeah. Understand where the bottom line is and where you don't want to cross, obviously, as you're going through it, but don't let small hiccups like that ruin the overall big picture.
Yeah, just think of things in terms of monthly cash flow.
Yep.
The price at the end doesn't matter. All you're really focused on is what can the business produce to afford every month? Because it doesn't matter what the number is at the end. It's just as long as you can get there.
All right. Well, I do want to be mindful of our time, so we'll go ahead and hit the pause button here. But I appreciate you guys stopping in today. Really appreciate you guys from a sounding board perspective over the years, just being able to navigate and think through things and try to get better as an organization. And I think it's been a valuable conversation. Thank you for joining us today. Those that are watching or listening for the first time, we do ask you to subscribe because we have a brand new episode out every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. and we don't want you to miss a single one, so make sure you hit the subscribe button. We don't even charge for it, by the way. Did you know that? Okay. Very cool. All right. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you next time right here on the Coffee Break Podcast.